the hallmark shows like Johnny Winter, Debbie Young. You have, you know, of course, the head shows. You mentioned Reverend Horton Heat. I remember playing with after, well, they started in 2009. And that was a year after Frank passed. Frankie Venom, that is.
Yeah, Frances mentioned that her first time in the bar was the Frankie Venom tribute night that happened. In October, she said.
Mm-hmm. And I played that, and I was playing with, and I ended up having to this day, a great relationship with Gord Lewis and Steve and the head, and played many a show with Teenage Head through a different incarnation and everything after that, and they're still playing, which is fantastic. We did one show, which was a couple of shows with Robert Gordon.
Oh,
and I remember the first time that Robert Gordon came and played there, and they didn't have a central air. And and Robert Gordon would go down to the beer fridge and just open up his shirt and just lay on the kegs in the basement, you know, cursing and screaming about how dreadfully hot it was. And and then Teenage Head somehow, and of course Lou being the center pin, right, thought it'd be a great idea, and it was, to have you know, Teenage Head and Robert Gordon play together. And it was slapped together, it was put together, and as you mentioned, I've played with a bunch of bands and as a side guy and everything, and have to learn music and try to, you know, lift music, as they say in the business, right? And I thought to myself, well, I don't think Gordon Steve have ever had to do this really before, because they're Teenage Head and they just play their songs, and if they want to cover a song, they'll do it their own way.
Yeah.
And I remember the night, which was the night right before the show, like, it was a Thursday night, and we were supposed to play Friday night, and Lou set up that we'd be at Downtown Sound, Mario's
rehearsing
studio.
Yeah.
And we would rehearse there, because that's where Tung Fu was rehearsing.
Yeah.
And I got there, you know, promptly and early, and Jack Pedler was there, and Jack and I were out having a cigarette, and we were the first ones there, and we both looked at each other, and knowing the stories of, you know, Robert Gordon and his expectations, etc., we're like, well, this is going to be interesting. and I can remember to this day being outside of the studio and hearing the commotion of Lou bringing in Robert Gordon and Gordy and Steve.
Yeah.
And Jack and I outside just listening to what we knew. And we knew, like, we prophesied it, you know, pretty much right out of the gate, that this is not going to go well.
No.
And all I heard was, nope. Lots of no's. And I remember going inside, and Lou was like, can you go to this in Hollywood and tell, I think it was Carl at the time, to basically close the bar, kick anyone out, and try to set up, you know, the stage, and we'll rehearse there.
Yeah.
And we did, and we started, and sure enough, we start going, and and Robert Gordon was such a slave driver that, you know, we would start a song, and he would, in like just nanoseconds, shut it down and say, no. What are you doing? And he would, like, lay in into Gord.
Yeah.
Gordy Lewis, and say, what are you doing? And then he'd look over at me, Greg, what note? I'm thinking about this note. He knew everything, like, for a Gord Lewis, Robert Gordon song, which were primarily covers or his versions, they had to be note for note, and he would definitely do it note for note, and Gord was Gord Lewis, that is just sitting there saying, well, it's still the right key, and it was,
yeah.
It was just Gord's take on it. So anyhow, around 11 o'clock at night, Robert Gordon's like, I'm going back to the hotel, and I'm going to come back here at 11 in the morning, and if this ain't right, I'm going home, and all the shows are canceled.
Yeah.
So we stayed up till 4:30 in the morning, and me teaching Steve and Gord how to do cheat sheets and you know, Nashville numbers, and it was a crash course. And we got through it. Anyhow, we got through it. We had two amazing shows. But the funniest was the Saturday night show at this in Hollywood. So we played the Alma Combo Friday night. And then we played the big show at Hamilton at this in Hollywood. And there's Robert Gordon, you know, when it came to the head songs, he didn't know a lick.
Why would he?
And he,
yeah. He's Robert Gordon.
Exactly. He's busting our balls so bad about not knowing his songs. And in turn, he doesn't know any of the head songs that he was supposed to play. So it was just... and he broke my watch that night, too. But, I mean, an incredible, iconic moment. Historical for me, because it actually was the nail on the last nail on the coffin for my relationship at the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here I am coming home, I think Thursday night at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and crawling into bed, and then sleeping for a couple of hours, getting up and do it all over again. And anyhow,
yeah.
Incredible.
The way I walk, the way I talk is just the way I talk. The way I smile is just the way I smile. Touch my baby and I go home wild. The way I love is just the way I love. Come on and be my little turtle dove. Touch me, baby, it feels so good. I feel as though I want to be, and I don't know if I should.
What was it? The Light of Day shows. Light of Day shows were great. We started them there.
Yeah.
In fact, with the dinner bells and with Big Pussy from The Sopranos, where he called the dinner bells the dinner bellies.
I was there. I was in the back DJing. It was all those shows were put on by Andrew Rahill.
And, yes, Andrew.
We had, you know, Willie Nile come up.
And Smokey or... we have Smokey Robinson up? No. We had... Who do we have?
Well, there was a whole contingent of Jersey players that came up. They all knew one another.
Oh, Joe Durso.
Yeah, Joe Durso.
And you could not find somebody that was, Hamilton was very much a perfect place for Joe Durso.
I'm a soldier marching in an army. Got no gun to shoot. What I got is one guitar. I got this one guitar. Town.
music plays all night long in the house of a thousand guitars. Through a purple haze, you can hear the song in the house of a thousand guitars. When the clock strikes 12, Robert Johnson sings in the house of a thousand guitars. Neath a delta moon and a worn brass ring in the house of a thousand guitars.
That came up and played. I mean, the shows, and I remember one time Lou was in a jam, and Neil Innes from the Ruddles.
Right.
I don't know,
right.
You know.
I
Monty
was
Python.
I was
Monty
DJing
Python.
In the back that night again. Yeah.
And Lou was like, "This guy needs a piano. Can we use your piano?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." And I brought down my digital piano, Neil Innes, and I still have his CD where he signed it and thanked me for using my piano, and he's passed. And what a funny gentleman. Incredible, like iconic. Like things that have shaped pop culture in the past, you know, 50 years. Individuals that have, you know, Rocky Erickson.
Another one, yeah.
You cannot the impact and the amount of the individuals that have come through and the stories that have shaped the past 11 years is indelible. I don't know what the impact is just for individuals.
The people that they brought through, all the different styles of music, all of their their back catalog of people that they met, all of that was always shared at the bar. Whether it was a fan up at the stage, or it was someone in the bar, or even if you wandered back to the back and bought some merch, everyone that performed on the stage had a story for you to absorb and to be a part of. And I think that's, for me, that's what I always enjoyed. Like, you know, I mean, what you just said there about learning, like, to me, we'll always have a laugh about that, but we'll always remember about, you know, how Greg had to learn all of this music till 4:30 in the morning. How, you know,
right.
you know what I mean? Like the night that it was like as the pre air conditioned era, where it's just like, oh, you're going to show a movie, and we're all gonna, it's a Monday night and it's Joe Ottaway, this guy? Oh, well, who the hell's this guy? And then you got to do your research,
right.
And you're like, you know, the headbutts guy. And not once knowing, once you started getting into learning about something, like going, this guy had number one hits in the UK? This is crazy. You know, and then the like you say, just walking in on the odd night, and you're like going, well, what's going on? Oh, it's the guy from Depeche Mode. He started with Depeche Mode, and he was on their first couple albums. He has this act, and he's over from the UK, and you're like, really? This is crazy.
It's mind blowing. It's truly mind blowing. Like the alarm.
The alarm was the other. Was another night.
Yeah.
Said I said I met the walking shoes religious in his worn out cowboy boots. He walked like no man on earth. I swear he had no name. Come on down and meet your maker. Come on down and make a stand. Come on down, come on down, come on down and make a stand. The floorboards of this life, I met that strange love cause we bore the mark of time. Hey, trash can, where you're going, boy? Your eyes are feet apart. Is that the end? Your carriage are playing a funeral march. Coming to his home, don't say I
didn't warn you. This prophecy's coming true. Our cavalry is thundering.
Like, incredible. I played with Kelly J. from Crowbar.
Yeah.
More
late,
than one.
Kelly J, yeah.
The late, great Brian Griffith.
Yeah.
Like, Junkhouse, you know, like, it all, for me, you know, Tom Waits, Junkhouse, Lee Harvey Osman, which I know you definitely have a whole history and catalog in of itself. For
that
you.
Was there. They were all friends of mine. You were there the right. night everyone played my 50th birthday party. We all just
right.
stood there and died laughing. Like, oh my God.
Right.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. What an incredible. That was yeah. a great night. I had actually had two shows that night. I had a show, a solo show, where I had to pack up and tear down on the other side of town yeah. and then drive and run and get on stage and play for your birthday that night. That was great. What a wonderful night.
I've been wasted. I've been drowned in your arms. I can't run. With both legs broken on the ground. I paint her face on every wall. I shout her name down empty halls.
Again, like you said, you know, Teenage Head. Varga has played, you know, another Hamilton iconic band. The history, and for myself, I have been exposed and expanded, and I always thought I was, you know, a well-rounded, you know, easy on the, any
yeah.
any weight jokes. Okay. but a well-rounded musician insofar as the fact of different genres and being exposed. But there was artists in people and influencers that I didn't even realize, you know, like getting to know Chris Houston there, which everyone knows who Chris Houston is.
Well, Chris Houston, you know, is like the punk next to Grelecki, Mickey DeSantis.
Yeah.
You could lose days and days of your life listening to stories from the two of them, not just about what they've encountered, but stories about the musicology of what others knew and who played with who and this happened there and this happened. You're like,
absolutely.
You know, it's just like, it was like you're going to school, but you're enjoying it.
Can I tell you a quick, a little funny story about Mickey DeSantis?
Sure.
So, again, talking about, you know, being exposed and open to genres, I don't know if you can appreciate this, but, like, I remember I was into punk when I was a skate punk and skinhead and everything else when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And you, as a teenager, you end up developing, like, with your ideologies, et cetera, and you become steadfast that you have to be, like, if you're a punk, you can't listen to anything else outside of punk, because then you're no longer punk. Right, it becomes, you know, almost blasphemous, or you're not true, right?
Right.
So, I remember, you know, for the Forgotten Rebels, and it's funny with this because I always thought teenage had, well, they were true punk as a kid, right? You know, until I got older and I started recognizing, you know, the idea of the whole concept of you know, just maturity and everything. But anyhow, I was at Lulu's talking about, and this ties together, because you think about what was the last Southern Ontario iconic place where you could see amazing shows? Lulu's.
Yeah, Lulu's in Kitchener.
That's right. I put this ain't Hollywood along the same line as Lulu's, not definitely in capacity, but insofar as its significance. And I remember going to see James Brown when he was 63 years old at Lulu's, and this guy doing a show and a set that was, this was 96,
mm-hmm.
and I believe, and just the energy and everything. I was like, this is insane. How can this guy do this? I can't do this. And I would have been in my 20s, and I go to the bar, and I order a drink. And again, this is coming out of, you know, I'm in my early 20s, coming out of my, you know, post-punk days and rebellious nature, and I'm being, you know, more open to music and everything. And I look to my right, and lo and behold, there's Mickey DeSantis right there. And we both do a double take, almost like we both got caught guilty, you know, of being at a show that we never would have, you know, openly admitted, knowing Michael now, you know, that, you know, man, that guy's true punk rock, you know, in every shape and form. He's, I don't care, I'll do what I want and go where I want and listen to what I want and do what I want, and which is total punk rock.
That's right.
And here we are now, years later, I'm sitting on the, you know, on the patio with Pam and Mickey, and we're talking, you know, about his, well, of course, Michael's telling me about the latest pop craze or his bicycle adventures and mishaps. You know, it's just incredible the amount of Hamilton history in music and how it's unfolded and how it was shared with laymen and pros alike. Like there was no class boundaries at This Ain't Hollywood. It was working class, but everyone was straight. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter who you are, what level or a kind of class that you thought you were or wherever. We were all there to share.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, it does make sense, because that's what, you know, I've not once felt that I went into that bar feeling out of place, you know, like, oh, okay, here's a different style of music. Here's some different people. And everyone was cool. You know, it was possibly one of the only bars in Hamilton I went to where there was a lot of people, and there was no door staff, and I've never seen a fight. You know, I see the odd little pushing or shoving, whatever.
I've seen like in contrast to a lot of the shows that I've done over the years and all the bars to large festival venues and what have you. I've been privy to see some of the kerfuffles at Hollywood, but knowing first and foremost the location of the place when it first started, and put it this way, cabs wouldn't come. Like, I remember our first New Year's there, like, cab drivers just wouldn't come down to that area. They were so reluctant because it was a bad area. You know, cops would be down there frequently, but they would, you know, if you had an incident, it could take a little while because not even they wanted to deal with half the nonsense that was down there during those transformative periods. Yeah. And make no mistake, what really I say fastened or quickened the rejuvenation of that area and making it more palatable was Hollywood putting themselves right in the thick and heat of where, you know, you would have hookers and drug deals right across the street, you know.
Yeah.
And being steadfast and transforming, you know, along with, you know, when we later had Super Crawl and the Art Crawls and everything. But all of those were definitely seeds that have made it to the point where they've now made it palatable that someone's going to buy the place, which makes sense.
Yeah, and yeah, and everyone knew that the place was going to be sold. It was just what we get now from everyone is just it was up in 2018. We just didn't want it to be sold while we were stuck in the house.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the whole thing.
Well, you know what? Jimmy Hayes, Jimmy Hayes from Harlem Pepper.
Great kid. He's the king. He is the king of stealing cabs on me, by the way. He stole two cabs on me outside the club. True story.
You know what?
Yeah.
He's done the same to me.
Yeah.
That little bastard.
I know.
Well, here's a great point. When they first started playing there, they used to sneak, because they were underage.
Yeah.
They would have to sneak beer in and get busted and get kicked out of that very club.
Harlem Pepper, yeah.
But Jimmy texted me a couple of days ago or in the past week, and you know, about the whole Hollywood thing. And I sent back to him and said, yeah, it's sad. It certainly is. But I kind of like the idea that Hollywood is going out this year in the year of 2020, where we're now doing a hindsight, it's 2020, no doubt.
Yeah.
The coincidence, irony, however you want to lock it up. But I would rather that it's being sold now, because the one thing I'm thinking, because we don't know, we're all in a world of unknowns, but what we kind of know is coming back out of this, as you know, with the recovery, as it's called, or whatever, a reopening. I don't know how Hollywood could survive anyhow. Yeah. And I would rather have this, what you and I are talking about, which is the memories and it going out with and closing its chapter in this city, you know, as opposed to post-COVID or coronavirus or
sure,
CCP
yeah,
virus
no, I know,
or
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean? I'd rather not watch it die a slow death.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
No, exactly. So yeah, I know what you mean.
We have this is the greatest thing about an iconic place like this is the fact that it's going out now, where we can close the chapter on that and revel in the fact that this thing was bigger than anybody really could appreciate or imagine. And maybe people will, I'm choking on this, But maybe people will turn around and say, you know, holy crap, we need to invest more and yeah, but it, and focus on the local music scene and the impact that it can have on the city. Not bloody likely, but anyhow, but this is, you know, this is what we have, and more importantly, what we've had. Hey, thanks to everyone at This Ain't Hollywood, the staff, all the fun times, arguments, love, booze spilt, Glenn, Jody, judge, and jury, and Lou Molinaro, of course, my pal, my my confidant. Thank you so very much for all the memories and helping me grow as an individual and a musician. You guys are the best. Thank you.
You must have got me mixed up with the lives we've had before. The drinkers and the gamblers, just like creeks upon the floor. Something in between, but I would rather be alone than be in love with you. That is something I was watching.
castle green. How the hell am I supposed to know if I should stay or I should leave here? Leave you alone. Well, I think it's about time I took a few small steps on my own.
Listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM, broadcasting across Hamilton from the edge of the Niagara Escarpment.
You're listening to Steel City Music.
And I am your host, Gunner. Hey, man, thanks for listening to the show. SteelCityMusic.ca, hit me up if you have any requests or anything like that. And you can also download any shows or episodes that you missed. So there you go. In this hour, two songs. That's right, two freaking songs. We're going to spin Dazed and Confused live from Led Zeppelin. I spun this about a year and a half ago, if not longer, and people were like, that's really good, man. Spin that again. And also this track, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Carn, Evil Nine. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy.